Chapter 39. Where are the nine? So wonderful a miracle as the raising of Lazarus from the dead could not be hidden in a corner. The rulers declared that such work as this which Jesus had done must cease, and this loving deed for his friends, and to more clearly reveal to the people by this crowning sign that he himself was the Messiah, sealed his own doom. From that day to this, the words and works of Jesus have divided the world into two parties, one like those who were at Bethany and knew from actual experience what Jesus was able to do, and the other who judged by their own limited measure and narrow horizon. The miracle at Bethany is told only by John. John, as you know, wrote many years after the other evangelists. Matthew, Mark, and Luke seem to have been careful not to mention this family at Bethany by name. One speaks of the home as the house of Simon the leper. One speaks of Bethany as a certain village, and another does not call Martha by name. This family was a family of friends of Jesus. Jesus disliked to do the spectacular. He often and often asked to have what he did kept secret. These friends of Jesus must have had a similar distaste for coming before society gossips of that day. They were wealthy, cultured, refined. Besides, there was a danger in notoriety. The Jews were decidedly anxious to get rid of Lazarus, who was a living witness, read and known of all men, in regard to the miraculous power of Jesus. So those who told the earlier history of Jesus and his words and works were careful not to mention anything which might in any way be unpleasant or harmful for the friends of Jesus and of the 12 at the home of Martha at Bethany. Immediately after the miracle, Jesus withdrew from Judea and went again east of the Jordan. You remember that the high priest Caiaphas gave his opinion in regard to silencing Jesus, that it was best for them to put one to death so as to save their office and position for themselves. If we do not do this, he said, the Roman power will not only shut the temple and thereby cut off our income, but will put us to death and take our riches. What we do, they all agreed, we must do quickly. You see, this was plain talk. It meant to Jesus that when the leaders of the Jews could find an opportunity, and it was the right time, when the common people were not in crowds about him, he would be put to death. Jesus knew what they intended. He also knew that he did not intend that they should take him until he was ready to give himself up to be slain. He knew that one man should die to save not only Israel, but the whole world. He knew better than Caiaphas, who never dreamed what a prophecy he uttered. There really was no ecclesiastical court of the nation at this time. Writers speak of the Sanhedrin, but for years it had not been legally organized. It had the name, but not the power of the great rabbinical council. Herod had broken it up. There had not been, and there was not at this time when they were declaring that Jesus must be put to death, any legal Jewish court which had power to enforce its decisions. This is a fact you must remember. The knowledge that there was not at this time any legal Jewish court anywhere in all Palestine will help you by and by to see what dreadful things these Jewish rulers dared to do, and then say it was legally done. The word Sanhedrin is used out of courtesy and is a Greek word for an assembly. Later, the word was adopted by the rabbis. So when these leaders decided to put Jesus to death, there was no authority for it. The high priest was the only person the Roman authorities recognized, and he, by his own wish and will, informally called together an assembly of priests and scribes, and this body, a sort of mob, pretended they were acting judiciously, when it was really without law, or authority, or rules of procedure. Read this statement till it is clearly understood, and keep it in mind whenever you think of the last awful days and weeks in the life of Jesus, the Messiah. And see in your mind's eye those angry and alarmed men who could not deny that Jesus had raised a man 4 days dead to life and health, and who would not accept this wonderful one, foretold by their prophets in all ages as the Messiah. Can you see Jesus at this time? Can you imagine how he thought and lived? What would you, what could you do if you were in his place? Did ever any great dread of some impending ill come upon you so that elbows and knees were weak, brain bewildered, and heart sick and sore? Do you suppose any boy or girl ever lived to be as old as Jesus without some experience? Half as old without a dread unspeakable of what was to come or what might come to pass in their own lives? There is nothing more depressing than the dread of great trouble or sorrow. When the ills of this life come, one braces up and bravely endures. But to live with the feeling of a hatchet above or a precipice below takes more courage than that shown by the martyrs at the time of their death. Jesus knew the situation at Jerusalem. He did not seem to be depressed. He was not gloomy or sad. He knew that an order had been sent out by the Pharisees for anyone to let them know where he was, and they would have him taken into custody and put to death. He walked no more openly among the Jews, but departed thence into the country near to the wilderness, into a city called Ephraim, and there he tarried with his disciples. This village called Ephraim was only a few miles north of Jerusalem, which Dr. Robinson identifies with the Ophrah of Benjamin, and where Gideon, instead of putting his grain on the hilltop threshing floors, did his work secretly in the valley vineyard so that the Midianites could not find it. You remember the story. So did Jesus. An angel came to Gideon and told him to destroy in that city the altars of Baal. To Jesus, in this place came the full glory of his self-sacrifices. From here he went forth to his death, thereby destroying throughout the world the altars of Baal. The angel of the Lord said to Gideon, "Go in this thy might and save Israel from the hand of Midian. Have not I sent thee?" Do you not suppose that Jesus remembered that message? How long Jesus remained in this country, we do not know. He rested. He taught his disciples and tried to prepare them for what was to come to himself and them. He remained in the wilderness country until late in March, when, with his disciples, he went on his way to Jerusalem, through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. He steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. He kept a fixed purpose to go to the city where he knew he must die. Did he go with the face of one who, when he fasts, is so doleful that he makes all his little world doleful also? No, indeed. When he was going through the midst of Samaria, he saw and heard 10 lepers. They cried out to him, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." Only a day or two previous to this, Jesus and his 12 had been refused food and lodging at a town in Samaria. When they passed through this country on a journey going from Jerusalem, the Samaritans had received them kindly, but now they were on their way to Jerusalem. Oh, how angry the disciples were because their master had been so received. They forgot all the lessons on meekness and patience and love which Jesus had taught them, and fiercely demanded of their master that he should call down fire from heaven and destroy the village. Because of that refusal of hospitality, the little company had to change the route, and in Samaria the lepers were outside the town. In passing along, they heard these lepers with their garments over their mouths cry out, "Tame, Tame, unclean, unclean." Would Jesus resent the treatment he had just received? Or were the disciples to receive another lesson in forgiveness and returning good for evil? Would Jesus turn a deaf ear to misery's cry? "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." Jesus healed the 10. 9 of them started off at once to show themselves to the priest as the law required. Not one of the 9, Jews perhaps, every one of them, not one turned to thank Jesus for giving them life and health. One, a Samaritan, came back, and while praising and thanking Jesus, there came into his soul a great longing to know more of him. So he received what he believed he could receive. "Thy faith hath made thee whole," healed, cleansed body and soul. Jesus knew what praise and thanksgiving would do for a soul, and he would not let the man's faith outrun his ability to give what was needed. But he looked at the nine going away, then at the grateful man at his feet praising God, and regretfully said, "Were not the 10 cleansed? But where are the 9?"